Do you struggle to find calmness in motherhood? I know I do. Perhaps, like most of us, you desire to find more joy in your daily tasks, but you're just not sure how it's possible. In fact, it often seems hopeless. So, you probably continue on your daily grind and perform mundane tasks, eagerly awaiting the moment you can just have your head hit the pillow at night. I know, it's tough. But what if I told you that we as mothers can find calmness, hope, and joy in motherhood? That it really is possible? Fellow mother, this podcast is for you. Join me, Danielle, as we journey together to cultivate calmness, discover hope, and experience joy in every single moment of motherhood. The mundane, the eventful, the trying, the super worthy memory book moments of motherhood. Let's dive into scripture together, share real truth and encouragement as we seek to embrace our calling as mothers and raise our children for the kingdom of Christ. Are you ready? Let's renew motherhood together. Hello, and welcome to the Renewing Motherhood podcast. I'm your host, Danielle, and I'm thrilled that you're joining me here today. Here on the podcast, we seek to encourage moms to find calmness, hope, and joy in their journey of motherhood. And no matter where you are in your journey, my hope and prayer for you today is that you will leave this episode feeling more encouraged and inspired to pursue a deeper relationship with Christ that spills over into the atmosphere of your heart and home. Today, we have a special episode, and I'm thrilled to introduce to you our guest, Edie Melson. Edie is a woman of faith with ink-stained fingers, observing life through the lens of her camera. She is a writer who feels lost without her camera and a reluctant speaker who loves to encourage an audience as she embraces the ultimate contradiction of being an organized creative. Edie knows the necessity of soul care and leads numerous workshops around the country on staying connected to God. Her numerous books, including the award-winning Soul Care series and Unruffled, Thriving in Chaos, co-authored with Rhonda Ray, reflect her passion to help others develop the strength of their God-given gifts and apply them to their lives. Edie is also the author of the soon-to-be-released book, Soul Care When You Are Grieving. She and her husband, Kirk, have been married 40 years and raised 3 sons. They live in the foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains and can often be found hiking, with Edie clinging to the edge of a precipice for the perfect camera angle and Kirk patiently carrying her camera bag and tripod. You can connect with her on her website, ediemelson.com, and through social media. Edie, welcome.
I am so glad to be here. Thank you.
When you talked about hiking through the mountains, that sounds like our honeymoon that we took in the Smoky Mountains of Tennessee many, many years ago. I am definitely a mountain girl at heart. If I could bring mountains to Florida, I would do so.
Yes, that's where I escape when I just need some breathing space.
Yes, it's, I often just look at pictures of the mountains and picture myself there. It's absolutely beautiful. We are so glad to have Edie on the podcast today. We're going to be talking about her new book and some ways that we can cultivate soul care in the midst of grief. And a scripture that we wanted to share with you today is Matthew 5, verse 4, Jesus' words from the Beatitudes. I just want to read that for you today. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. We've often talked about how motherhood can be very lonely, and this is very true in seasons of grief. Y'all, nothing can prepare us for the death of a loved one. Sometimes it comes without warning at all. Our culture tells us that time heals all wounds, and we just need to pick ourselves up, shake off the dust, and move on. But if you've been through grief, you know as well as I do, it's not that simple. If you've walked through grief, you definitely know it's very much easier said than done. And Edie, you know this firsthand as you've experienced several seasons of grief, which you share about in your book. And you just start our conversation off today, please, by telling our listeners a bit about you and what led you to write this book.
Well, I always tell people I'm creative out of self-defense. I'm the daughter of a classical musician turned landscape photographer. That was my dad. And my mother is an internationally known watercolor artist. And so I always say that if I hadn't been creative, they'd have kicked me out of the family. Now, that's not true, but that has been kind of a fear at times. So for me, creativity has always been an outlet. And one of the things I discovered is that God can work through creativity. And creativity looks different for everybody. I think we all have that inherited gene from our creative heavenly father. And sometimes it's found in cooking. Sometimes it's in decorating our houses. Sometimes it's in taking pictures or planning birthday parties or sewing. It can come about in many different ways. And when I started thinking about these soul care books, actually before I started thinking about them, I went through a very difficult season. My dad was at the end of his battle with Alzheimer's, and my mother was his full-time caregiver, and my sister and I were helping. So the three of us were deeply, intensely involved with these last stages of Alzheimer's. And anybody who has done any caregiving knows how intense that can be. I also had a book come out at the same time that all of this was going on. So there was just pressure on pressure on pressure. And I remember sitting in the parking lot of a local fast food restaurant, just finally at the end of my rope, crying out to God and saying, I can't do this alone. I know I need you, but I don't know how to get to you because I can't spend hours in Bible study or Bible reading. I have trouble getting to church because there always seems to be an emergency on Sunday morning. And at night, I'm so exhausted, I can't even finish my prayers with amen because I'm already asleep. And so I did. I just cried out to him, and I felt like he told me that I needed to go back to being faithful in the little things. Sitting with my dad, I had 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there, 30 minutes here at a doctor's appointment, all of these different times that I had. And he helped me see that I could reconnect and connect with him through creativity. So I began carrying a little notebook in my purse. I had one of those freebies. Somebody gave me a little cardboard box with four colored pencils in it. It was probably something that was one of my kids, but I stuck that in my purse and I began to pull out this notebook, and I would doodle a word. I would write faith, and I would draw flowers around it and add color. And I found that as I was doing that, my mind was turning towards, what does faith mean? How do I have faith in these circumstances? Sometimes I would just go outside with my cell phone camera, because it's not like I could carry my big camera with me everywhere. I would just go out with my cell phone and I might take a picture of a tiny little flower and just marvel at the details that God had. And I found that after several weeks of doing this, I was a brand new person because I was being faithful in these little in-between times, and God was filling me up to overflowing. And then my dad passed, and about a few weeks later, I had a couple of people ask me about it, and they said, we noticed a change. What happened? And I began thinking about it before I answered, because, you know, playtime with God sounds like kind of a flip response for a serious question, but that's really what it was. And so I began realizing that I had gone back to the idea of Sabbath rest and spending time in his presence, just soaking in anything he had to give me. I used to think that had to be a whole day or a whole season. And, you know, God will meet us in those moments. And so that's really where this series began. And back in 2018, I proposed this series to my publisher, and she loved it. And we brainstormed these different titles. And the first one was Soul Care When You're Weary. And then we decided we would do Soul Care for Writers. And then the third one would be Soul Care When You're Grieving. And so in the end of 2019, right before COVID, I began writing Soul Care When You're Grieving, thinking about grieving the loss of a loved one or someone you care about. And of course, then COVID hit and we found we were grieving everything. You know, life changed. We couldn't see loved ones. Our kids were at home. We were trying to comfort them. There was just nothing but grief and loss, it seemed like. And so I restructured the book and broadened it to include, you know, different kinds of grief and different situations. And I finished it in mid-November of 2020. On November 23rd in 2020, my precious daughter-in-law was in a horrific accident and she passed away, leaving my son and their three-month-old baby. And immediately my husband and I began helping my son with caregiving and supporting them. And I pulled the book back from my publisher because number one, I couldn't imagine launching a book on grief in the middle of grieving. And I also knew that there would come a time when I wanted to add to it. But what I found was that God had prepared me for where I was. He had gone before me because I had spent the entire year previous to that studying grief. And I was able to apply some of those lessons. And even more than that, I was able to give myself and those around me grace and freedom to grieve in our own way. Because everybody grieves differently and it doesn't look the same. And in the past, I had always felt like I was doing it wrong. So that was how the book came about.
You know, I think there's so many people who do think that they're doing grief the wrong way. And that's something that you mentioned in the very first chapter, if not the introduction of your book, is that you have to give yourself grace. I think you say you have to give yourself grace for the mourning process to experience that and what it's going to look like for you. What would you say to someone who maybe is just experiencing the grieving process? Where would you start in what would you tell them in where to start to unpack all the things they're feeling?
Well, the first thing I would say is don't feel guilty about all the emotions. Mm-hmm. You know, I felt guilty because I was angry with God. I mean, here's this young mother who was taken away from her three-month-old baby. In the world's eyes, there is nothing fair about that. And I'm not saying that that was a good thing. It was not. I would still do anything to have changed that. But I can also tell you that God has brought some amazing good out of that situation. I tried really hard and pretty much succeeded not wasting time feeling guilty about how I was feeling. I was angry and I took it to God. He and I basically had a wrestling match one day. And I remember just crying out to him because when the accident happened, we actually followed the life flight helicopter onto my son's farm. And we were there when they loaded her on. And, you know, I prayed and I asked God to heal her. And he didn't hear. He healed her in heaven. But, you know, I was frustrated. But God took all of those horrible things that I was feeling, and he absorbed them and he returned love. And the fact that he didn't abandon me, he didn't leave me to grieve alone, he walked through that process with me. So I think that's the biggest thing, was not to feel guilt, and also to realize that every incident that we grieve looks a little bit different. I didn't grieve my daughter-in-law the same way I grieved my dad, or the same way I grieved my best friend 25 years ago. They're all different.
I think that's so amazing when you're coming out of the grieving process and you're able to look back and see how God worked in your life through each one. I think it's pretty amazing that you can actually come out of it and say, look what he did. Like, you can't see it in the process because you're too overcome with all of the emotions. But I love how you said you were angry. I think everybody experiences that anger. And I think it's okay to admit, yes, I'm angry, because when you say it out loud, when you talk to God, he already knows anyway, let him know, I am angry. I want to move past this. I'm trying to work through it. And he meets us right where we are in that process and then walks us through it.
And others around me were angry longer than I was. I was not angry as long as I would have expected to be. When my best friend in 2001 was murdered by her husband, I was angry for 2 years. You know, it took me a long time to get past that. But this time, the anger didn't last as long. And, you know, it may have been through what I learned. It could have been any number of things. But I just have to learn to accept that my journey is always going to be different. And there was a lot of my grieving that didn't happen immediately. You know, I'm a little bit of a processor. So my grief happens privately, and it happens after the emergency is over. You know, so after we got our son settled and the baby in daycare and started being home more often at our home, that's when I began falling apart and experiencing some of the things that you think you're going to experience at the beginning. Those five stages of grief are not really steps. They don't follow each other in an orderly fashion. Nothing about the grief process is orderly. Mm-mm. It's all messy.
I love how you mentioned that. Because, you know, all the science says that there's the five stages of grief. And if you are walking through grief the first time, you expect to hit all those stages and to hit them in order. But then you realize you may go back, and then you may skip one, and then you may go back to the one you missed. And it is messy. I like how you said that. For me, it has been coming up on 9 years since the death of my sister. And it was a shock. Her death was unexpected. Walking through that, I think I skipped a lot of steps along the way. And in reading your book, there's a chapter talking about finding joy after the storm of loss. And when I was reading through that part, I don't think I have been at a place to find the joy after the storm of loss until maybe about a year ago, even being willing to do that. And you mentioned in that chapter that you had talked to God about using the quiet process to expose fragments that you needed to face. So this grieving process, God allowed things to come to surface maybe that you didn't want to face before. Could you tell us a little bit about that, about what that looked like?
For me, I want to know what's coming. I want to see the big picture, and then I want to sort of take care of it. But grief isn't like that. Grief's like a broken mirror. And as you pick up the pieces, you see different things reflected in it, in each piece. And God doesn't make us deal with all of it at once. And like you say, sometimes it can be years later before we're finished dealing with some of the major parts of it. Now, I do think that time gives us perspective. And I do think that time allows us to move on and continue. But there's a hole in my heart that my loved one's deaths left that will never be filled. And I think to look to fill it artificially can be unhealthy in some ways. I think it's okay to always miss them. We'll see them again in heaven, but here on earth, there's a hole. And that's, you know, sometimes it's filled with better memories rather than the intense sadness, but there's still a hole.
Yes. What would you say to that one who is trying so hard, wherever they are in the process, beginning, middle, it's been years, and there's such a hole that it's keeping them from pursuing their relationship with Christ? What advice would you give them on how, not to fix that per se, but what would you say to the one who is just not being able?
I think the biggest thing you have to do is to start the conversation. You know, Christ has been at the door knocking, but he's not going to barge in. And I think once we start talking, one of the biggest things that helped me, particularly with my daughter-in-law, losing her, was every morning before I even got out of bed, before the baby woke up, I would spend time reading 3 to 5 chapters a morning in the Bible. And I just started at the beginning because I didn't know where to start. And sometimes it didn't make sense, you know? But the fact is, even if I wasn't consciously aware of it, it started my day with a strength and a foundation that I would not have had otherwise. So I would say, go to the Word, go to Psalms, go to Genesis, look and see how consistent God has been throughout his entire Word, not just the New Testament, but the whole thing. And realize that God can take your anger. He can take your disappointment. I felt betrayed. I feel slightly ashamed saying it, but the fact is I did. I felt like I put it out there. I did everything right. I prayed the right prayer and you didn't answer it right. You know, and I had to fight that out with him before I understood that he did answer it right, but it wasn't the answer I wanted. And I'm not going to understand why he answered it that way completely here.
Yeah, if we were meant to understand, we would. Yes. And I think, you know, when seasons are great and everything's going well, it's so easy for us, you know, your steadfast love endures forever. And this is for God's glory and he is good in all things. And then when things really fall apart and our faith is really, truly tested in the grieving process, it is hard to say he is good when he takes a life of one that we love. But I would absolutely agree with, if we're having a hard time pursuing that relationship with Christ again, and we feel that's been broken, we just need to get back to the Word. Just start somewhere. Dig in, pray, read, let it be messy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really good.
And for me, it helps to journal it. I mean, I am a writer. So, and I have been a writer, my mother says, since I could crawl to a white wall with a red don't know if that's true, but that's what she tells people. So, but the fact is, that's how I process things. And when I write it out, I can often see the truth or the lie much more clearly than when it's swirling around up here in my head. Because in your head and in the dark, scary things are scarier. Mm-hmm. And when you write it out, things become clearer, at least to me.
I love that. So get in the word first and foremost and pray and find a way that works for you to process whatever you're grieving. You took photos, you got out in nature. I loved reading about those parts in your book. You just got out. Because sometimes if we're stuck in our own heads, stuck in our own homes, falling deeper into the grieving process, getting out and away from that, those small steps can bring some clarity too. And as a fellow writer, I have to ask you, what was your favorite part of writing your book? Was it giving the journaling parts, the creativity process? Was it writing out specific prayers? Was it sharing other different experiences? What spoke most to your heart as you were writing your book?
I think it was probably looking at the experiences and how God used those experiences, particularly being out and taking pictures, to illustrate spiritual truth. And I did love the creative process too. There are some of those creativity exercises that I love doing, you know. So I pulled out some of the stuff that helps me and that brings me joy. And tried to share those, as well as some that I tried to appeal to people with all different kinds of creativity. The thing to me was just amazing at how God illustrated the things he was talking to me about. I'm thinking about one instance in particular when we were staying on the river, the Ohio River. And I walked out into this intense sunrise. I mean, it was just furnace red, and it was cold outside that morning, but I saw the view from my window and just threw on sweats and grabbed my camera and rushed outside. And it was icy and just this deep red. And then as the sun came up, it began to warm the air. And you could see it, and the colors softened. And it was such a picture of what my grief had been like with our daughter-in-law. It was just such an intense furnace sort of experience when she was taken from us so suddenly. And yet almost imperceptibly, as I moved closer to God and was able to feel more of his presence in the process, the days softened and warmed up and melted that icy heart that I had inside me and brought a whole different color to my life. And so seeing something like that illustrated with what God was telling me is to me the most exciting thing, because I think he talks to us all the time.
Yes. And in different ways and different times, maybe when we don't even expect it. I love that. Would you also encourage those who are grieving to not only talk about it with the Lord, but to get in community and talk about it? What are your thoughts on expressing your grief?
I think it is very important to have a safe place to process. And I believe, and our church believed, that with such an intense sort of grief that we experienced, they called it traumatic grief because of circumstances. Our there were members in our church who set up a fund anonymously to make sure that we had money to use for professional counseling. And the money could only be used for professional counseling. And it enabled my son and my husband and I, and, you know, siblings, people who were there to get the counseling that we so desperately needed, because this wasn't, grief isn't always something that you just get over. Mm-mm. You know, you need help for it. And there is nothing wrong with that. I am so glad that we all took advantage of that. And I'm so glad that we had a faith community that knew the need before we even did, and set up money that we couldn't use for anything else, and that would basically just be returned if we didn't get the counseling that we desperately needed.
Oh, that's good. And I'm sure there are many churches who are able to do that. And I think it's important to either seek professional counseling in a safe space. And if you don't have access to that, you know, financially or nothing around you, if you've got friends to confide in, a safe place to process your grief, I think that's really important to talk about it. Yeah,
it is. But you have to be careful, because I know when I was grieving my dad, I had a well-meaning friend who told me I was doing it wrong.
Yes.
She is an extrovert and I'm an introvert. So I process very privately, and most extroverts process very publicly. And so she felt like I was hiding and denying what I was going through, when in reality, I was just being true to who God made me. But that caused me a lot of guilt, because that just fed the lie that I was doing it wrong. So, you know, you do want to confide in people who will support your grief journey, but you want to be careful of who you allow to speak truth in your life.
I'm very, very glad that you mentioned that. I had certain family members and certain friends who, like yours, said I was doing it wrong and went with culture, that I just need to move on. Like, it's been 6 months. You need to move on. Whereas, I mean, depending on how grief happens or how the traumatic event happens, you can't really just pick up and move on. So I think that's good. And the person, if you are listening today and you are grieving, you'll know, I think, who your safe people are, who you feel led to confide in, and not force yourself too early out of the grieving process if you're not ready.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Edie, this has been such a blessing and such an encouragement. You have been a joy to talk to. It's been great to learn more about you and your book. It's been great. If listeners want to know more about you and your ministry, where can they find you?
Well, they can find me at ediemelson.com, but the book is still up for pre-order right now, and you can go to boldvisionbooks.com and click on their bookstore, and you can go ahead and pre-order the book there.
Ooh, okay, everyone, ediemelson.com, and you're on Instagram, yes?
Oh, yes, I am.
Okay. I'm Instagram, the only, Facebook, Twitter.
Yeah, I'm the only Edie Melson on the internet, so you shouldn't have trouble finding me.
She is in all the places, friends. Yes, connect with her everywhere, and boldvisionbooks.com to pre-order her book. I'm going to pop that link in the description box for you so you can easily find it. And friends, I hope and pray that you were greatly encouraged in today's episode on how to cultivate soul care when you're experiencing grief. And more importantly, I pray that you were encouraged to draw closer to Christ in your walk, no matter what stage of grief or whatever you're going through. In Him, you will find peace and hope. I want to leave you with one last verse today, 1 Chronicles 16:11. Look to the Lord and his strength. Seek his face always. Friends, thank you for joining us. Edie, again, thank you so much.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
And friends, join us next time as we chat with Becky Keefe, author of The Simple Difference. Don't miss that. Join us next time. And until then, rest in him, mamas. You've been listening to the Renewing Motherhood Podcast, where we dive in together in our unique callings to cultivate calmness, discover hope, and experience joy together in our motherhood.